Yes, I can hear you now. Thank you so much for joining us, Katie Gibbs with the University of Ottawa. You're a PhD student in the biology department. Do you wish to add anything to your resume?
Well, I'm actually no longer. I finished in September.
Oh, congratulations.
So, yeah, thank you.
And sorry, so, but congratulations.
Former PhD student.
So where are you working now, Katie?
So I'm actually executive director of Evidence for Democracy.
Well, I'm glad to hear that that's continued
so that's strongly. That's essentially the group that has formed out of the Death of Evidence rally.
Absolutely. So why not, I think that's a perfect place to start. I mean, the general concept is one that is something that I harp on the show quite frequently, which is that there seems to be something. I don't know anything about the legality of it. I'm not a law or a policy expert per se. But it's something that sort of, as a Canadian, feels instinctively like it shouldn't be legal, which is taking tax dollars to fund research that goes towards things. Again, as you point out, and as I've pointed out many times in the show, we're not talking about issues of national security here. This isn't weapons research. It's not top secret, you know, terrorism activities. We're talking about like soil analysis and stuff like that, and like the cleanliness of groundwater and genetic information about bison and stuff like that, that is either being totally blacklisted from the public or being put on the other side of a field on, you know, being in the middle is about 5,000 hurdles.
Exactly.
That's something that I've been upset at for a little while, and clearly you're upset about it too, because you're now directing an entire group that's focused on that. But I mean, that's sort of been my rant. Why don't you tell the story in your own words?
Well, I mean, the things you point out are very much true. The current government has put in place new policies that are very sweeping in nature, that pretty much any media request that come in, it doesn't matter what it's about, either has to go to a departmental manager or sometimes even to the Privy Council office in Ottawa, which is really quite mind-blowing. So even for the cases that you point out, things like bison genes, snowfall patterns, really any questions at all that come in from the media to our scientists are now rerouted to comms people, and the scientists are just not allowed to answer at all. I think most Canadians would find this alarming. I'm also not a lawyer, so I don't know about the legality, but whether it's legal or not,
as a taxpayer, it feels like it should be. I mean, that's my reaction.
Exactly. I mean, I see it as, this is public science. This is our science. We've paid for it. Like, it inherently belongs to the public because we've paid for, you know, the research expenses. We pay the salary of these scientists.
I think a lot of the time that sort of aspect gets lost on people. And I just want to interrupt you again for a minute, just sort of to emphasize what I think is sort of the most important point here, which is that I think it's really, really important if you're thinking about this issue, if this is something that a listener hasn't come across or they're not really aware of. I think someone could take the opinion of, well, okay, here's a bunch of, you know, a few small scientists that are upset because, you know, who knows what actually happened, but they're upset and sort of say, you know, and basically, as someone who isn't in sort of aware of what's actually going on, say, well, this is just like teacher strikes. It's all politics. You know, some people say, yay, teachers. Some people say, you know, the government should make cuts, and it's just a he said, she said, and, you know, whatever, and basically blow the whole thing off. But that's from the point of view of the fact that I think a lot of people or the people who aren't upset about this are viewing it from the perspective of, well, the government has information and they give us some of it when it's useful, but basically this is their thing. They're doing stuff with it. It's theirs. But the entire concept of the government is that they're serving the people. The only time when the government has a moral or legal right to hold things from the public, at least in the sense of the intention of democracy, is that they, you know, for instance, there are valid reasons to say that something is of national security. So the government withholds information because it genuinely is to the public's benefit not to be aware of certain details.
Yeah, absolutely.
But other than that, there's no argument.
Yeah,
and I think people have the balance. The assumption is on the wrong side. The assumption
is
we should have access to everything unless there's a good reason rather than vice versa.
Exactly. And if you take a look at the actual letter that we have on Science Uncensored that people can send to the government, it makes that case as well. It makes the case that there may be cases where it is in the best interest of the public to not necessarily have all the facts. But in those cases, the onus is still on the government to show why that's a special case. So So it's exactly, you're right, the default has been swapped, whereas the default should be that everything is open and available to the public, except in the few cases where it makes sense for it to not be. Whereas right now we're seeing the complete opposite, where everything, regardless of how mundane it might be, is sort of behind this, you know, communications firewall. So I think, yeah, you're completely right. This, it doesn't belong to the government. And it is actually a little bit ironic that it's a conservative government that you would think, you know, believes in sort of small government principles.
Well, we commonly see that fiction is a fiction on a daily basis.
Yeah,
obviously. I mean,
exactly,
there's claims of what conservatives want. And the thing, this was something I was thinking about this morning when I was sort of reading through preparing for the interview, was there's actually a lot of conservative positions that I totally take. I'm not a psycho left-wing liberal on every issue by any means. It's the fact that the conservatives we're talking about in this case don't adhere to those principles. They're not actually conservatives in a lot of cases.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, in Harper's case specifically, he ran on a platform of transparency and accountability. And that's really something that we're trying to get across with the Science Uncensored campaign as well, that if you believe in a transparent and accountable government, then, you know, these extra barriers to the open communication of our scientists just don't make any sense. So, yeah, there's that issue of, you know, the public has paid for this, it's our science, we should be able to access it. But then there's also the other side of it that, you know, it's the foundation of our democracy to have informed public debate. And in order to have an informed public debate, we need to, at the very least, have the scientific information available. You know, that is really what drives our democracy. You can't have a government that's only releasing information that goes along with their ideology or their agenda.
You're kind of missing both parts there. You're missing the informed public part, and you're missing the debate part. I mean, as we saw
these
sort of bills that went through recently, there was no debate on any of this stuff.
It just got
rammed through.
Absolutely.
So, I need to take a minute here because we're skating dangerously close to something that, you know, well, it's not like illegal for me to do at CIUT, is sort of one of my personal values, which is that we as a show and me personally do not support or are against any particular party. What my complaint is here is what the government that happens to be in charge right now is doing. I would be just as upset if anyone else was doing it.
And
I just want to make that absolutely clear. This isn't a like anti-conservative or anti-Harper sort of interview.
No, it just ends up being
that way by default.
Well, but it goes back to what we're saying. I mean, there are absolutely a lot of people in Canada who would identify themselves as conservatives, and who likely even voted for Harper, who would be upset by what's going on. And even there have been a lot of conservative people who've spoken out about it. So I think, you know, this issue of, you know, transparency and accountability and allowing our scientists to speak freely to the public, that absolutely crosses partisan lines.
So let's go through some of the specific details here, because again, like I was saying before, like someone who maybe is just sort of reading the headline on this, or maybe they took a brief look at your website but didn't really go through it, or maybe they don't have some of the context for what it is that we're talking about. So it doesn't sound like we're just sort of like randomly picking on people. Let's go through some of the specifics.
Well, first off, that's partly why we made the website, because this is a really difficult story to follow, because it's really a story that's been playing out over like 5 years. Right? So you see it on the news now and then, but each individual story isn't all that alarming. What is alarming is the context, and when you put all of those individual cases together is when you really see this bigger picture that is quite alarming. So that's partly why we did the website, was so that, you know, people would have a place where they could go and see the chronology of what has been happening. So if we talk about some of the most recent ones, because they're sort of really what was the impetus for doing the website as well, is the new rules actually go even further than just limiting communication of scientists to the public and the media. So at DFO in February, they put in new rules about how scientists are allowed to go about publishing their papers. So previously, the new rules only applied to papers that were written by government scientists. Whereas now the new rules also apply to any papers that the scientists have collaborated with non-governmental scientists as well. So that's really a huge new reach as well, that even if you collaborate with like an academic scientist, you're still going to have to go through these new rules. And the biggest change is that now, instead of the actual scientists signing off on the form after they've submitted their research to a journal, it's already gone through peer review, the journal has accepted it and said, yes, this is good science, we want to publish it, then at that point, there's just sort of like a copyright form that needs to be signed. And previously, the scientists signed that. And under the new rules, that has to go to a departmental manager to sign it. And so the concern there is that they could use this essentially as a way to stall or prohibit this work from actually being published, even after it's already gone through the peer review process.
So there's specific things in here where, I mean, my personal reaction is anytime I hear the word conspiracy, my stomach churns and my eyes roll back in my head, because I just don't really have any time of day for conspiracy theories. But there's specific things in here that really seem rather Orwellian. Let me get you to talk about just for a minute about the science conferences and their quote-unquote handlers.
So the main example from that was at a polar conference last year. So for people who aren't scientists, scientists often go to scientific conferences. That's where you get a chance to talk to all the other scientists in your field, share ideas in a really sort of fluid manner, form new collaborations. It's really a crucial part of the scientific process. And so what we were seeing last year was the case of a scientist who was going to this polar year conference. And the government actually sent a media relations officer or handler to attend the conference with her and literally like follow her around the whole time at the conference and monitor what she was saying to people and make sure that she didn't speak to the press. And that's really unheard of. I hadn't ever heard of anything like that happening before.
So when we're talking about like leashing scientists, we're almost getting pretty close to that being literal.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there wasn't a physical tether between the two of them, but
there might as well have been.
Yes, exactly.
So, I mean, I don't want to get the gentleman in trouble because it's nothing specific to do with him. So I'm going to make this really, really vague, just so I don't get anybody in trouble. I don't think he deserves it. You know, he's just doing his job. But there was a gentleman from a government agency that I was talking about at a conference I went to that should help protect him. But where I'm rather friendly. People find a lot, and I'm pretty good at getting people to talk to me. And so we walked up, and they're like, "Hey, where was CIUT?" And you know, so none of their like emergency buzzers go off because I didn't say, you know, the Star or Globe and Mail or anything like that. So it was like CIUT. So I think maybe his defenses were still down. And I started asking questions about policy and, you know, how does the government approach this or that issue? And he was like, "Oh, Paul, yeah." And then after about 5 or 6 minutes, because I was really enjoying this, I love talking to government types about how decisions get made and about policy direction and that. About 5 or 6 minutes into it, you could slowly start to see his brow sort of thicken. And then by the end of it, we're like, "Great, thanks so much for your time." And he's like, "Hang on a second, let me give you my card. Would you just do me a favor and just email me before this goes to air?" Mm-hmm. I said, yeah, no problem. I'd be more than happy to. Like, we're here to cooperate with everybody. I'm just, you know, we're just here to spread information. I'm not trying to push a certain point or anything. And then I got an email from him later. He's like, "Yeah, you can't lose any of that or I'm going to lose my job." And again, I have to protect his identity, but that was a true story that happened to me.
Well, you know, our government scientists, they are completely terrified. I've spoken to many of them myself, especially, you know, I've been trying to find people who will speak out because it will help bring attention to this if we can put a personal face on some of these people. And even a lot of the ones who've been laid off, you know, there's been a lot of scientists laid off recently as well, so I was hoping that maybe they would be willing to speak out. But they're even worried about losing their severance package if they speak out, even though they're no longer employed with the government. And just, you know, if people are saying, "Well, you know, maybe this is reasonable," I think it's also really important to compare this to what's going on in the U.S. and the U.K., where they're moving in the complete opposite direction that we are. In the U.S., they've put in place clear policies that allow government scientists to speak to the media. All they have to do is, you know, start their interview by saying, "I'm not speaking on behalf of my department." Mm-hmm. And the example that I really like is you have James Hansen, who's, you know, a famous climate scientist.
He's one of my heroes, absolutely.
He's also the head of NASA, right? So he's a government scientist in a very important position at NASA. And, you know, he goes to all of the climate protests. He was recently arrested. He literally just took a vacation day from his job at NASA and got arrested at a protest. And they were fine with that. A government spokesperson said what he does in his off hours is up to him. Whereas that's absolutely the opposite of what is happening here.
Yeah, if that was a Canadian scientist, him and pretty much everyone in his department would have been fired. I mean,
oh, absolutely.
at least that's how it feels.
I mean, even just at the Death of Evidence rally last summer, I heard from a lot of government scientists who sent me emails saying, you know, we really support what you're doing. We would really love to come. But we're worried about losing our jobs if we attend the rally. And that's just attending a rally, whereas, you know, you have James Hansen in the U.S., one of the heads of NASA, just taking a vacation day and getting arrested at a rally. I mean, it's really the polar opposite.
Absolutely.
And even the Nature, which is a world-renowned science journal, they've written a few editorial articles, actually, about what's going on in Canada and how shocking it is. And they've really said it's been a complete role reversal with the U.S. in what we've seen in the past few years. So we're seeing, you know, similar things happening here to what was the case under Bush in the U.S., whereas since Obama has come in the U.S., they've really done some great things with their science policy, and we've gone the complete opposite direction.
Well, I think there's one general rule for people. If they don't want people to be upset about the bad things they're doing, find a way for them to stop finding out about them.
And
that seems to be the strategy here. I'm afraid we've got to let you go. It was so much fun having you on the program today, you can see the sarcasm in my voice when I say I'm completely shocked that we agree across the board on all of this stuff.
Yeah.
But this has been one of my personal hobby horses, so I'm so happy that you guys are doing what you're doing, because you're actually focusing on something that's sort of like one of my top 10 issues. Just before we go here, do you want to give people information about how they can get involved, how they can check out your information, how they can contact you, all that good stuff?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the best thing is to visit our website. It's www.scienceuncensored.ca. We have a lot of information there, so you can see for yourself the examples that have happened and make up your own mind if you think it's a reasonable communications plan or you think it's muzzling. And we have a form letter there that you can fill out as well to send a message to the government.
Okay, well, thank you so much for your time. Again, that was Katie Gibbs with Science Uncensored. You can check that out at scienceuncensored.ca or just do a Google search for The Death of Evidence. Thanks so much for your time today.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, we're going to take a music break, and we'll be right back after this pause.